Why should we care about collectives? There could be some of you in the audience who've never heard of collectives. You're just sitting here for the ethics hours. People care. I get it. I've been there myself. People care because right here in Texas, Texas A&M got the number one recruiting class in the country recently. And that doesn't usually happen. You know, it's normally Alabama, it's Clemson, it's Georgia, it's Ohio State. So why did Texas A&M have such success? Well, it could be their locker rooms. It could be their academic services. But everybody guesses that it is probably because the recruits were promised a lot of NIL money if they chose to come to Texas A&M. So people care about collectives. I can tell you on your campuses, you know, your coaches of your high revenue sports are caring about collectives. Your ADs will be putting pressure on you to help the student athletes get more money through these collectives. Because the recruiting consequences are huge. I mean, at Ohio State, our football program pays for all 36 of our sports. So it's really important, but this is true of any school, at a lesser resource school. Whatever sports make money for you, you want to continue to grow that. So an NIL collective is a legal entity that is formed by your school supporters to get NIL money into the hands of your student athletes. And they can be set up differently. Amy will probably go into more detail about the real tax-ish area. I like know enough to be dangerous. But some can be set up for profit, and some can be tax-exempt. How they're set up is really between the IRS and the collectives and the supporters. But schools are nervous about collectives, especially after the NCAA's recent guidance, because it's now clear that we're responsible for what they do. So I think it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out. And as I said, it's tricky with coaches who want to be aggressive in the space and lawyers who are a little bit more cautious by nature. So Amy's going to talk about the model rules of professional conduct and some of these tricky ethical areas.
Yeah, I think just one thing I'll say about the exempt status of some of these collectives. So, right, again, these are independent legal entities. They are not the institution. We want very much to sort of maintain that separation between the institution and the collectives. So we hear tell of folks who are both setting up for-profit entities, which sort of makes more sense, and you can kind of understand how they're getting money and how they're paying these student-athletes. And then there's a handful that are claiming to be formed as exempt entities. But of course, you know, paying a student athlete money is not an exempt activity. So we have a lot of questions about what someone's exemption application looks like. So I would love to see what someone has submitted to the IRS and what they have claimed their exempt purpose is for forming one of these organizations. I mean, certainly it can be, you know, we're doing literacy programs or whatever it may be, and they just happen to be engaging student athletes to do this charitable work for them. But then you wonder about the reasonableness of the compensation. So on the tax front, I have a ton of questions about what a tax-exempt collective might look like and how the IRS is going to feel about that. But moving to the model rules of professional conduct, right, while we're here, so for the lawyers in the house. So these are some of the rules that we bumped into most often in the working group when we were considering different scenarios and situations. So these are not all of the rules of professional conduct that may apply. These are just the ones we kind of came up against most often. And of course, because every state has its own set of rules of professional conduct, I'm going to talk about the model rules right now, and these were created by the ABA to serve as a model for states to use when developing their own, you know, their own rules for that particular jurisdiction. Every state has its own set of rules of professional conduct. I think the significant majority of them are based on these model rules that are promulgated by the ABA. But of course, you should all consult your local rules to make sure that you know what your state says in this area. And then just as a note, the local rules are often promulgated by state bar associations or the highest court in the state and not necessarily codified in statutes. So first one we're going to talk about, Rule 1.6, confidentiality of information. So this is pretty straightforward, right? As a lawyer, you have to keep your client's information, your client's confidential information confidential. and not reveal that information to outside third parties. So again, in the working group, the working group was established with representatives from across the university, right? As we were tackling this whole new world that we hadn't had to deal with before. So we had, you know, several lawyers on the group, and then folks from athletics and folks from marketing and folks from advancement, sort of all across the board. And so oftentimes as we were considering issues, there could be confidential information that kind of came into play in terms of our consideration, right? Something that was relevant to our decision-making. And so as lawyers, you have to be careful that you're not disclosing more than you should be, even in your internal group, right, with your internal university employees. And then also making sure that any confidential information that is discussed is not traveling outside of that group, right, is not being relayed to the student athletes or third-party companies. That's a pretty straightforward one. The next, Rule 1.13, so the organization as client. So there's two in this. We're going to start with subsection F. So this rule just says that a lawyer who represents an institution has to make sure that the individuals associated with that organization, so that's officers, directors, employees, and then other constituents, right, know that the lawyer is representing the institution and not that individual person at the time, and that the organization's interest may be adverse to those individuals.